Whether seeking to build professional relationships or simply to connect better with others in everyday life, my guest this hour has plenty of advice for strengthening rapport with strangers. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:07 on Tuesday, February 11th. As social media become a more present element of our professional life, how have the rules of engagement changed? In what ways have they stayed the same? We'll explore that and more this hour, and we hope that you'll call in with your questions and observations as well. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Susan Rowan joins us. She's the author of How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide for Making Lasting Connections in Person and Online. Her book was first published 25 years ago. This anniversary version includes updates for using technology and social media. Susan, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much, Cynthia. I've looked forward to it.
So have we, because we want to know how to work a room. What does it mean to work a room?
Well, you know, a lot of people confuse that with networking. Working room, an old political term, and I'm originally from Chicago, and you know that's old politics. It's really about going into a room. It's about circulating, meeting people, having conversations, connecting with people. It's not about backslapping or glad-handing. It's about what we do to create rapport, meet people, and, you know, through ongoing connections and being in touch with people, create relationships, business and personal.
Why is it important to be able to work a room?
Well, they cite the health studies that say that if you have a social network and social connections and that you are out there socializing, that your health is better. In fact, I read a report from a research study at UCLA in older people that those that had social engagements and could be in, you know, whether it's a party or a meeting or even playing bridge, they got less colds. I thought that was a good reason. But it's important because there's so many opportunities in every room, because connecting with people is what gives us information. And you know what? Makes us have a good time.
Mm-hmm. But how is it different from networking? I guess define networking for us and draw the contrast.
Well, you know, I say it's two different things. I wrote two different books. The Secrets of Savvy Networking is a different 250-page book with no repetition. Networking is the first thing you do. You have to circulate. You have to socialize. The networking is the follow-up. You can't network a room. You network when you do the follow-up, when you stay in touch with people. You can go to a networking meeting where that's the whole point of it. But the working room, it could be a party, it could be a reunion, it could be a fundraiser. And it's really about being at that event at the time and socializing, whereas networking is all in the follow-up. And by the way, you could be great at working a room and have no follow-up and be a terrible networker. Or you can be so good at the following up, introducing people, sending what you said you would send, be a wonderful networker and still find walking into a room full of people you don't know to be completely daunting.
Yeah.
Well,
talk about that a little bit. How do you get beyond the shyness or other apprehensions that might keep you from jumping right in and working that room?
Well, and I think I'm so glad you said that, Cynthia. The premise of How to Work a Room is based on the fact that about 90% of us, as of the 2000 edition, self-identify as shy, according to research at the Stanford Shyness Clinic. So when you're walking into a room and you realize, oh my God, I don't feel so good, this is, who am I going to talk to? Do you know that at least 90% of the people are thinking the same thing? So that actually means that it's quite normal. But on the other hand, if you're walking into a room, to remember that 90% of the people there feel the exact same way actually makes us feel more comfortable, because we know that we're not alone. And how do we overcome that shyness? Well, the first one is to prepare. I think when we prepare to go into any room, whether it's a business event or a social event, we're more comfortable, and then we're more confident, and then people get more comfortable with us. And so it becomes very cyclical. But if we prepare, may I share a couple of points that I give in the book of what to prepare?
Yeah, certainly.
You know what? The first thing to prepare is what you're going to say about yourself. So you should have your own self-introduction. Because it would be great if someone would introduce you, like you just introduced me, but you walk into a room, and there might be no one to introduce you around. It could be a convention, as I said, a party, whatever. So you're on your own. So when you prepare how you're going to introduce yourself, you're more comfortable. And at an event, a gathering, that's not a 30 to 60 second networking introduction. It's a 7 to 9 second, really just a personal connection with people, a little bit about yourself. It's a pleasantry. And that could be your name. It could be what you have in common with the people there, why you're there. And if it's a business event, instead of your title, you can give the benefit of what you do. So when you prepare that, you're more comfortable. Second thing is prepare conversation.
Go back to the introduction for a bit. Could you just give us one example of how you would introduce yourself in 7 to 9 seconds?
Yes. I met someone at my health club, and I happened to say to her, well, what do you do? And she looked at me square in the eye, said, I teach horses how to dance. And I looked at her. Well, we were in a dance class. I said, I'm glad you don't bring them here. But I said, really, what does that mean? And she said, I'm a dressage teacher. And that was brilliant, because what she did is gave me something that piqued my curiosity. I asked her the first question. Then she responded, and we were in a conversation.
And it only took a few seconds, and she hooked your attention right away. So you also mentioned collecting some conversation items. Like what?
Well, you know, this may be old-fashioned, but when we read the newspaper, whether you read it on your phone, whether you read it on your computer, whether you actually read it print and then have to wash your hands from the ink, reading a newspaper will give us 3 to 5 items. And that's a local paper and a national paper. You should know what's going on in your community and in your city and in the country at large. So when you read the paper, whether it's sports or whether you're thinking about the Oscars or whether it's the Olympics, there's something to talk about. I once had a client at a speech that I gave. You know, he was an up-and-coming executive say to me, I'm way too busy to read the paper. And then his next sentence was, I'm really uncomfortable talking to people because I don't know what to say. And I wanted to say to them, did you just hear what you said? You won't and can't read the paper, but then you don't have any conversation to make. The newspapers are full of the conversation. Even the curated, like The Week or The Daily Beast that we can get online, there are a lot of items that if we read it, look at what piques our interest and might in the interest of others, we have conversation.
I imagine you have to be pretty selective, too, about what you choose to discuss. For example, I know politics and religion sometimes fall low on the list of things to bring up, especially to strangers.
You have to be very careful with that. What you can, unless, of course, you're at a political event or a religious event. But really, those are subjects you really have to earn the right to talk about through a relationship where you know someone a little bit better.
We're talking with Susan Rowan. She is the author of How to Work a Room. And we're taking your questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. Do you walk into a room full of people and feel daunted about the prospect of having to strike up conversation and make connections that would last? We are welcoming your emails as well at talk@wpr.org. You can also leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about how to work a room this hour with Susan Rowan. She's the author of the book called How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide of Making Lasting Connections in Person and Online. We're not only talking about how to make lasting connections in person, but how social media and other online interaction have changed the way to connect with people professionally and personally. You can call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, and you can also tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Susan, we were talking about how to prepare our introductions and how to open a conversation with perfect strangers as we enter, say, a banquet or a party. What else should we know about working a room?
Well, the other thing that we really need to know is the room that we're walking into. One of the things we prepare is, and this is so easy to do in this day and age, is you've been invited somewhere or you're going to a professional a meeting or gathering, you can go online, do a little Googling or Binging, and you can find something out about the event, generally who is the audience, who might be there, what you can even see their, maybe their magazine online, etc. So there's no reason to go anywhere and not know what's going on, especially if it's an organization. They'll have a website where that event will be up there. So preparing for the event and who might be there and what the purpose is and the theme, it helps build your own conversation. I think the other thing to remember is, and I wrote this, I think, in all my books, you walk into a room, really, most people there are nice people. They're 90%, not just maybe shy, but they're 90% of the people are going to be nice, down to earth. They're there for the same reason you're there. And that's, if you think of it that way, that is comforting. But one of the things that makes it easier if we walk into a room is, instead of thinking about, oh, how am I going to make myself comfortable, I tell all my audiences, think about what you can do to make other people comfortable with you. When you focus on making other people comfortable with you, it takes that onus off of you, whether you're shy or not. And you then extend yourself. The other person becomes more comfortable, and then you're in a conversation. I think the idea of what are the best opening lines, I know, Cynthia, a lot of people have asked me that.
Mm-hmm.
They've done research at a university. I remember hearing it quoted on CNN. Biggest opening line, big smile, and either hi or hello. Because what do we do when someone smiles at us?
Smile back.
Smile back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and when people wait for the brilliant thing, I don't know if you've ever done it, but I've done it. Oh my God, they're so and so. I got to say something really smart. By the time I think of something I think is smart, they're already at the other end of the room. So it's best just to have the big smile, because that makes us approachable.
Well, how can we make use of the people that we know, that we do know in that room, in order to make more connections?
Well, and that's, I'm so glad you brought that up. One of the things that makes it easier for us when we walk in a room is give it a glance. You stand at the door, take a deep breath, glance around the room, see where the food is, see where the bar is, see who is the familiar face in the room. Going over to the person you already know really starts it off as being an easier event to be in. So go over to the person you see, say hello. What if they're in a conversation with someone else? Stand in the periphery and, you know, smile, but definitely say, I just saw you. I just wanted to be sure I said hello. And if you see that they're having a conversation, you then back out. But very often, people like a third or fourth person in a conversation, and they will kind of open the circle up to let you in. So go over and look for the face that's familiar. But here's the caution. You can't stay there all night.
How do you know when it's time to make the exit?
Well, one way is to look at people. If I say to people, if they're starting to tap their toe and look like they're ready to bolt, you know, watch people. Look for the signals. They will let you know when it's time. And you can see very many people are polite. And the idea of exiting a conversation is not very comfortable, because we don't want to make someone feel that we're just walking away.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can be the person that notices that the other person is just about ready to be finished and help that exit, they will be very grateful. And that's a very gracious thing to do as well. So what you do, and if I may give a, shall we say, a gracious exit, is when you see that, because, you know, when people come to an event, they're there to meet a number of people. What you do is you put out your hand. You don't lean into the exit, but you put out your hand to say, oh, it was so nice talking to you about. And then what you do is give a small phrase that will summarize what you talked about so that people know you were listening. And then if you want someone's card and they haven't offered it, just simply say, oh, do you have a card? And then if they haven't asked for yours, you can just say, may I offer you one of mine? Mm-hmm. But when you do that little summary of what you talked about, that really helps people, A, remember, but also think, whoa, you were listening. And then what you do is you exit, but you walk at least a quarter of the room away from that person over to another group or another person standing alone. Because you don't want to turn your back on people. That's a metaphor, but it's very insulting.
Mm-hmm. So a quarter of the room offers enough space to make it a clear cut, I guess, a nice clean break.
A nice clean break. But there is another exit that's called, well, people call it the bring along. Sometimes you're talking to someone and you can tell they're more nervous than you are. Instead of exiting them, if you see someone you know or who might look familiar, you could say to them, gee, I see someone I think I met last month. Would you like to come over with me and meet them? And then that way, there are three of you in the conversation, and you've helped someone who's a little more nervous than you expand their connections and feel more comfortable.
Why is it important to speak to someone who's standing alone?
Oh, you know what? That's the easiest thing to do, and I'd love all our listeners, please know this one is easy. The person standing alone is standing there going, oh my goodness, who's going to talk to me? Or they're uncomfortable. You can have a great time at any event, party, or gathering if you just talk to the people standing alone. And I actually did this 2 weeks ago here where I live at TEDx Marin. I just went to a couple people standing alone. They weren't standing alone because they wanted to be alone standing there in this room. There was just no one that they knew how to approach. It's actually a very wise thing to do, but it's also a very kind thing to do because it's the kindness of strangers. Talk to someone who no one else was talking to. They could be the most interesting person there. You never know unless you talk to them.
You also mentioned that we should have some common ground icebreakers. What are some examples of that?
Well, you know, you walk into a room. Well, for me, especially when it's a buffet, I go straight to the dessert table. And this is the hint that I give my audiences, and I'd love all our listeners to do this. When you go to an event that has the buffet, if you go to the dessert table first, you will find the friendliest people, because anyone that's picking out a mini chocolate bundt cake or a little mini eclair, all you have to do is talk about the dessert, the calories, which one do you think I should try. People are very open at the dessert table.
Hmm. Well, I wouldn't mind that advice. I'll take you up on that.
Yes, really.
Straight over to the dessert table. Now, breaking and entering, we talked a little bit about that. You want to enter a group kind of on the periphery, wait to be invited in, and then break away when you get the sense that it's time to move on. But what happens in between there? What happens if we've been folded into a conversation that's already in progress?
Oh, well, you know, I get this asked a lot when I speak to business audiences. How can I get my agenda out there if I've just come to a room? You know what? If you come to a group and you've been invited in, you go along with the flow of the conversation. And you can add something about yourself, again, as a little phrase in the midst of a sentence to see if anyone connects with what you're saying. If they don't, then that's information for you to continue on with the theme. But I'd like to add a little, I guess we could call it the Roanne advice about getting into the groups. Pick a group. When you walk into a room, and I know this happened, and I bet a lot of our listeners have heard that, you walk into a room, you can see that groups are already formed, and that makes it very uncomfortable. But if you stand in the periphery of a group, which, by the way, at least three or four people that's animated and already having a good time, that'll be a group that's easier to get into. And once there's a lull in the conversation, I had someone in a presentation said, what she does is just say, may I join you? And she said, you know, nobody's ever said, as a matter of fact, yes, we mind. You know, so people are very open, but pick the group that's already animated. And really, four is good, three is okay, two is tough.
Can you clarify something? Are you standing on the periphery and then speaking into the group, or are you just standing awkwardly waiting to be acknowledged?
Well, I think that's what we all do, is we always stand in the periphery of the group hoping someone will look our way. But you do agreeable body language. And, you know, if they're saying something that's interesting and fun, you smile. And when someone looks your way, you can step in.
Okay.
Because you've been included by eye contact. But I'd like to give you, I think this is something that is so important. And as I've trademarked Mingling Maven, I think this is what the real Mingling Mavens do. They make the rest of us feel comfortable. When you're in a group and we all can see peripherally who's around and trying to get in, if you will take one step back, you will include the person that's been on that periphery and reset the circle. And when you include the person that's been excluded and invite them in, they will always remember you.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if it's business, those will be people that will want to do business with you. You made them feel comfortable. And that's what, I know the title's How to Work Room, but one of my friends from Chicago once said, should have called it How to Be Nice in a Room.
Well, Susan, we will pick up from there after the news. We're talking with Susan Rowan, author of How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide to Making Lasting Connections in Person and Online. Taking your calls and emails at talk@WPR.org. The news is next. Whether you're already a social butterfly or a wallflower, my guest this hour says we all have something to learn about working a room. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:36 on Tuesday, February 11th. We're talking with Susan Rowan, author of How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide to Making Lasting Connections in Person and Online. This book was published 25 years ago. It's celebrating its silver anniversary, and it's updated now to include some of those tips for online connections. You can join us with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@WPR.org. Susan, we have been talking a lot about the skills that we want to employ, the actions we want to take as we enter a room, but I'm wondering what role charisma plays. I mean, don't you have to have some personality?
Well, everyone has some personality. It reminded me of one of my friends said a long time ago about a friend of hers that we said, oh, he has no personality. And I'll never forget, she said, he has plenty of personality. She said, it's not that great, but he has plenty of it. You know, we all have personality. I think it comes from when you walk into any room, in any event or whatever you do, there's some confidence. And I really believe when you're prepared, you feel more confident. And all it takes is to meet one person that you get engaged with in a conversation that's interesting, and we become animated. I was speaking to a law firm, and one of the partners said, what do you do when you talk to someone who's really boring? And his general partner looked and said, that means you haven't found what that person's interested in yet. So I think our personality changes. I mean, even I who wrote the book, I mean, there's some days that I'm sure I don't have all the personality. But this idea of charisma, I would like to throw out two other ideas. I think there is a certain amount of charisma, but really it's about having, then I have a chapter in the book on it, charm combined with a little chutzpah. And what that means is charming is hard to define. We know people that have it. They make us feel that we're so important and that we're so interesting. And they're the people that could spill a glass of wine, you know, all over a table and be able to recoup from that because they just seem comfortable in their own skin. But the idea of chutzpah is having the courage to go over to people you don't know and to say something that may or may not be funny. So charm and chutzpah are a wonderful dynamic duo. And the third, charisma, well, when we're confident, I think that charisma comes out of us. And you know what else? Honestly, Cynthia, if we bring our sense of humor and can laugh at ourselves in any room, I think that's a great combination.
Let's talk a little bit about social media and online interactions. I mean, with the rise of email and Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter, all these things that have now become part of our daily life, not just outside of the office, but also at work. How has that changed the way in which we connect with people?
Well, from what we read, a lot of people are connecting more so online and digitally and avoiding the face-to-face. And to me, that is a terrible mistake because there are those events in our lives, no matter how digital we get, that we have to be face-to-face with people. And when we haven't done that and we've just been texting and emailing and Facebook messaging, we sometimes lose our own confidence in ourselves. I had a friend that was involved in a Facebook group of old friends getting together, and they all were online messaging. And she called me. She said, "There's a wedding. It's up at Tahoe. I know these people. We've been Facebooking, messaging. I don't know what I'm going to say to them in person." So what we want to do is be able to do both. I'm a great adopter of social media, blogger 9 years, Twitter. No, well, that's where all my time has gone. Twitter, I think it's going to be 5 years. And all of that is good because it's a great way of staying in touch. It's a great way to find out information. It's a great way to meet new friends. I have a friend that I met because of a tweet that we are now real pals, and eventually we met in person, but we stay in touch, and it all happened because she sent a tweet, or I sent a tweet, she sent a tweet, I retweeted it, she got in touch with me. It's important to have the social media skills, but it's in addition to, not instead of, picking up the phone, having a cup of coffee with someone, going to an event. We're getting so that we respond to that little sound bite, and we need to still be able to have a full-blown conversation.
Well, because more of our work is now online, I imagine it's harder to make a lasting impression, especially when the only way you can communicate is in writing, and people can't pick up on some of the nonverbal cues, like the smile you talked about us having.
I know, and you know what? I bet I'm not the only one. I once got an email from someone, and I was devastated because how I read the email was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, it was like a sucker punch. When at least a year later I discussed it with the person, his intent was not that at all. So you know how we read what people write, and that could even be in old-fashioned letters. That's why it's so important to augment, even in a business situation, with occasionally picking up the phone. I know when I have an issue or need customer service and they say you could do it online, I always pick up the phone and will say, hey, I wanted to talk to a person because I know you can help solve the problem. And I got to tell you, they end up doing that. So I'm a big believer is if you're sitting and writing an email that's taking 5 minutes, that's too long. Pick up the phone. And a lot of work does go by, certainly by online, but if you can augment that where you can hear a person and pick up the phone, even if it's for 5 minutes, something additionally happens that doesn't happen in email. You can hear, you can't see the person's face, but you can hear tone, and that's important.
Larry emails, what are some polite things to say to break off a conversation with someone so that you can get on to meeting with more people in the room?
Well, one I did say was, oh, it's been so nice to talk to you. And then you say, I'm so glad to know that you're also a contributor to Wisconsin Public Radio. And I know.
That's nice.
Well, you know, that when you find something like that out, I have friends who have dogs. They, I'm so glad to know that your dog, you know, goes to the same dog park mine does. Something that they've said, summarize it. But it's so been so nice to talk to you. Here's the thing that one of my friends does, and I haven't done it yet, but I know a couple of clients have done it. They said, oh, this is great. You're talking to someone. You know you're having a great conversation, but you know they're there at the event to not just talk to you for the whole night. My friend Diane, what she says to people is, oh, my goodness, I'm having such a great time. I could monopolize your time all night, but I know you want to meet people, and people want to meet you, you know, and I don't want to stop you from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we have done that. Now, I've actually done that. I've actually made this mistake. I was talking to someone in the corner of a room. What I didn't realize is I had literally pushed him in the corner. It looked like he couldn't wait to bolt. He had the deer in the headlights look. So I think it's all watching people and helping them exit. But I love what Diane says. And you know what? It's so natural for her that people just feel charmed. Because it isn't only what you say, and this is my response to Larry, it's also how you say it. We need to go everywhere with a sense of energy in the room and that positive smile in our voice and on our face.
We're talking with Susan Rowan. She is author of How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide to Making Lasting Connections in Person and Online. If you have any questions, the number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Learning how to make lasting connections with people in person and online with Susan Rowan. She's the author of How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide to Making Lasting Connections in Person and Online. And we're taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. You can also tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Al in Stoughton is on the line. Hi, Al.
Yes, I'm just wondering what advice she might have for dealing with the overly opinionated people that can't resist the impulse to inject their personal politics or religious views into situations, and especially online, in terms of finding like-minded people or even in some cases the sport of finding those they disagree with.
Mm. What about that, Susan?
Ooh, making that a sport. Well, there are a couple people who have put their religious views and political opinions out online, and honestly, what I've done, I've hidden them from my timeline, defriended them, because I don't want to read that mess. So I think there's a way that we don't have to expose ourselves to that. When we're talking to someone who's really adamant and does that in person, I think that's where the gracious exit takes place, where you just excuse yourself, move on, go over to another group. Because if it's annoying and if it's something that we don't like, why are we standing there and listening to that? I've had that happen too. And somehow, to me, if we stand and listen to it, we validate that which we know is uncomfortable and maybe often to us not valid. Mm-hmm. So we can't validate the invalid. So I think exiting, disengaging is a really important thing to do, because we're not going to be able to shut them up is what I believe.
That you know, kind of hits home with me. People will ask, what do you do for a living? And I'll say, I work at Wisconsin Public Radio, and we cover a lot of politics, especially state politics, on our network. And so I'm sure instinctively people say, oh, here's how I feel about the governor or something. It puts me in an awkward position because we as staff don't take sides. We are just here to share information and to have a discussion about the issues. But that's number one where people go when they find out what I do. It almost makes me want to be deceptive about what I do for a living.
Well, you know, I've actually had people say that to me because someone who was working for the IRS was in a program, and he said, yeah, I don't want to tell anyone what I do. As soon as they say I work for the IRS, you can't even imagine what people say. But, you know, as I listened to the different reports and news, it gets back to something we said on Conversation. When you do listen to public radio, and I'm here in San Francisco and our NPR station KQED, when we listen, we hear both sides. So if you're listening to public radio, you can make conversation for really a whole evening just based on the reports that you hear, and they are very even-handed. How do you handle that? I mean, I'd love to know. Cynthia, what do you say to people when they start in with you?
Well, if I'm in a group, it's easy for me to disengage. I'll let other people debate the politics, and I'll just kind of sit quietly and kick back with my beverage. But if it's just one-on-one, I just say, you know, I don't really express my opinions on matters of politics. And then it becomes a little awkward because then they've lost, what do I talk to you about? You know, that it becomes a thing. And then I'll just sort of turn the conversation around and change topics somehow. Or I sometimes also express the opposite point of view of what they're expressing, or I'll sort of offer in an empathetic way, well, some people actually believe that this is the right way to go, and here's why. And it usually calms the conversation a bit. And eventually we move on. So.
And that is a great idea and tip. But you also said something, eventually we move on. And conversation is not, let me plan the conversation, it'll go my way. Conversation is very organic. I have friends that I talk to, we have like six conversations, we never finish a sentence, and we can follow each other, which is really interesting. But, you know, something can happen and someone else will say something. So really, because conversation's organic, you go to another topic. Mm-hmm. And it might be, and here's what you asked earlier, it might be something that you have in common in that room. It could be the food, the venue, how much time it took you to drive through the traffic, could you find a parking space. And what I want to say to our listeners, it sounds like small talk, and it is. Conversations start with small talk. It's those little things we have in common, and it moves from there. You know, people say, well, the weather. Well, people talk about the weather because that's what they have in common. I just listened to your weather. We have had driving rains in San Francisco that are drought. We had 12 and 20 inches of rain. Don't you think people were talking about, oh, my goodness, we finally have the rain? I hope we don't have to go on drought conditions. So don't just be dismissive of small talk, because it's, especially with weather and the food and the venue, it's what you're having in common.
Let's talk about some mistakes people make when they're mingling. Sharing political opinions might be one. What are some others?
Oh, here's one of the mistakes. And when I did the audiobook, because we have an audiobook of this, you'll hear my voice saying it a little more adamantly, though I do think it's a good audiobook. Please, if you have to bring your phone to an event, turn it off or keep it on vibrate, but basically turn it off. There's nothing that turns people off more than, in the old days, it was looking over someone's shoulder to see who else was in the room that had a better title, better looking, more influential. But now we do that by checking for our text and email messages while we're in conversation with someone else. I just had someone tell me they were talking to someone at an event who felt the vibration of the phone, took the call in the middle of their conversation. Not an important call, but just a call. We need to start paying attention to the people we talk to. It's a big mistake to, I guess you would call, do two things at once and multitask. Mm-hmm. Either you're in the room or you're out of the room.
We mentioned that your book was first published 25 years ago, and now we're celebrating the anniversary of that. You've updated it for social media. But in what ways has the art of working a room changed over time since you first wrote this book?
Well, the first part is people haven't changed. Technology has, and the technology's affected our behaviors. That, and someone said it's we're in the soundbite generation. We don't have the patience. We're so used to that 30 seconds. And then really having longer conversations, people get more impatient. And I think it's because they don't know how to make the longer conversation based on the questions people ask me. Okay, well, that's small talk. How do I have a conversation that's meaningful? Mm-hmm. People don't know how to do it. People tell you what they want to talk about. What we need to do is be listening to what people are saying and not so quick to change the subject to our agenda. But what changes, why I had to change this book, which I had rewritten in 2007, is some of the things no longer exist. Like I'd use the term, you know, personal digital assistant, PDAs. Well, no one knows what that is anymore. It's like I have a story in the book that I read in ARC, San Francisco Chronicle. James Patterson was at the new Jazz Center, and the announcement said, and would you please turn off your pagers and cell phones? And the young kid turned to him and said, what's a pager? So I think I had to make it relevant. I don't think people have changed. We're still shy. We still want to have a good time. We still want to be comfortable. But we need to grow a little more patience, and I think we've become a little more impatient in the last 25 years. But I did have to change the verbiage because I didn't want that young man saying, what's a pager, about the book.
Sure. Well, in just our last moments here, some of us might not have any big business events necessarily coming up anytime soon. How can we use this advice we heard today in our ordinary lives?
You know what? This book, and actually I talk about weddings, I talk about, you know, reunions. This is totally about socializing. And so anything that we've said now, at a wedding, you don't give your business introduction because all people want to know is, how do you know the bride? How do you know the groom? I went to a wedding in Chicago, and how I had introduced myself was saying, oh, I'm the first girlfriend of the father of the groom, which, by the way, started conversations. People want to know context for why you're there. Mm-hmm. All of this applies to social. Again, people go places because they want to meet people. They want to be friendly. They want to have a good time. Bring a smile, good firm handshake. And how about some of the stories, even if it's about your kids, your dogs, your mother, you know, the parking problem you had, people relate to our stories. And How to Work a Room is full of stories. And I think stories is what makes things and conversation more interesting. I want to hear your story. I don't need that many facts, and really say something that'll make me smile. So bring those funny, odd circumstances with you. And here's the point about humor. It can never be at someone else's expense. But if you make a little fun of yourself, that's okay.
I do that all the time. Susan Rowan, thank you so much for joining us today and for getting up at 4 o'clock your time to be with us. I just realized that this time difference, I can't believe you did that for us. And we're so grateful. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much, Cynthia.
Susan Rowan is the author of How to Work a Room, The Ultimate Guide to Making Lasting Connections in Person and Online. It's a 25th anniversary edition of her book. And she joined us today from California to talk about it. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing the hour and for on-air direction. Thanks to Robin Cherry for on-air production. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.